Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another important episode of The New World next week, which, of course, you can find all the information, sources cited, high quality, low quality, audio, video, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James will begin this week with the rhetorical question. Is Israel trying to lead the U.S. to war with Iran? After months of quiet, the drumbeat out of Israel for a war with Iran has started again. Iran is on the verge of a nuclear bomb, a point of no return, as some Israeli politicians have it, and squadrons of anonymous sources, credulous reporters, and columnists have been mobilized to get out the word. What happens next? Almost certainly a few months of quiet. And then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu or a fellow hawk will strike up the band and we'll do this dance again. Israel's security establishment is far from united on Iran, with many warning that a preemptive war could do more harm than good to Israel's interests. Israel and Western powers have been periodically warning that the Islamic Republic of Iran was on the verge of building a nuclear bomb since the early 1980s. As far back as 1992, Mr. Netanyahu, then a member of the Israeli parliament, said that Iran was 5 years away from a bomb and that its nuclear programs must be, quote, uprooted by an international front headed by the U.S. That doesn't mean this latest round of the sky is falling Iran-Israel nuclear dance should be ignored. Rumors of war have a habit of becoming war when they carry on for long enough. Israeli anxiety about a nuclear Iran isn't feigned, and it would like to remain the region's sole nuclear-armed state. And while it's hotly debated whether Iran is actually seeking the bomb, merely the technical skills to build a bomb, or only a peaceful nuclear power program, increasingly technical confidence in Iran will always frighten Israelis. Someday it's possible that the band will play on. This is kind of an editorial piece, James, from the Christian Science Monitor, but we'll include the whole other slew of related reports all from the last day or so. Why do Israeli media keep predicting war with Iran is from Time magazine. Business Week notes Israel would strike Iran to gain a few years, so says Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Michael Oren. Meanwhile, U.S. blogger Richard Silverstein says Israeli source leaked the attack plan that Bibi and Barak are pitching to their ministers, and according to the document, the campaign will open with a cyber attack that will paralyze the electrical grid. That's from Ynet News. Israel plans for Iran strike. Citizens fear the worst. Again, from Business Week, James. And it's so we see that Israelis, much like Americans, much like Iranians, are all essentially held hostage by insane misleaders. And we keep voting, James.
Unfortunately so. I hope people do check into some of that the other coverage that you were talking about there, the related stories that, of course, we'll link up in the documentation for it for this video. But I hope people do check into it. For example, that Silverstein, Richard Silverstein article was particularly interesting about the leaked plans that talk about this starting off with a coordinated cyber attack, and then there's going to be a round of missiles, ballistic missile fire, and then fighter jets to do the strategic strikes. It's interesting that this stuff is being leaked and it's being covered. But I tend to agree with the gist of that op-ed that you were reading from there. I think that this is more about a psyop war than it is about actually launching the war at this stage. It's kind of a war of attrition to wear people down to this idea that it's inevitable that Iran is going to be attacked at some point. And if they keep talking about it and keep talking about it and keep talking about it and keep bringing it out of the drawer every 6 months, bringing out and leaking it out to the press and getting all this coverage every few months, it becomes this almost inevitable in the minds of the public, so that when it finally actually does happen, people will just kind of accept, oh, well, this has been coming for a long time. So I really do think there's a psyop type of mentality to this, and whether or not this particular round of we're gonna bomb Iran rhetoric it will actually result in anything, I think at the very least it goes towards that conditioning of the public. So I think it's something we have to be aware of, and unfortunately we just can't let our guard down, because it's at that time that they're going to strike. So once again, we don't know if this will come to anything or if this is just more rhetoric, but it certainly is part of a pattern that we've been watching with horror for at least the last 5 years, realistically the last 10.
Yeah, this is certainly not the first time, James, you and I have reported on this on New World Next Week. And the other part to tie in, I think, is that a lot of this chatter concerns, are they going to do it before the upcoming U.S. presidential selections? So speaking of still voting for the same idiots. But our second story concerns leaks that we just referenced. But here are more different style leaks from the Daily Mail. U.S. government secretly spying on everyone using civilian security cameras. And some of the points of note here, cameras use facial recognition to log people's activities. Details released by WikiLeaks, which has now been hacked and down for days. And this has disturbing echoes of CIA officials in the hit film The Bourne Identity. So again, from Daily Mail. Anyone who takes a photograph at a high-risk location is logged as a suspected terrorist on a vast network of secret spy cameras linked to the U.S. government, according to leaked emails. People pointing cameras in New York are regarded as suspicious, and the facial recognition images of them from the civilian CCTV are fed into a data center run by U.S. firm Abraxas, which is unfortunately not the Santana album. The system then connects with hundreds of other cameras in a bid to pinpoint potential terrorist activity, it's claimed. Details of the system emerged from emails released by whistleblowing website WikiLeaks. The same issue has caused outrage among privacy campaigners amid fears that it could be abused. It has disturbing echoes of the film The Bourne Identity, starring Matt Damon, in which CIA officials use a network of spy cameras to track around the world someone they thought they had assassinated. According to the email released by WikiLeaks, pictures of people's faces are encrypted and sent to a fortified data center at a secret location. The TrapWire system is linked to civilian CCTV cameras. TrapWire is used by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in a bid to deter terrorist attacks or catch those responsible once an incident has happened. According to the company's own documents from 2007, TrapWire is a, quote, unique predictive software system designed to detect patterns of per-attack surveillance, end quote. This includes photographing, measuring, and signaling. More than 500 cameras using the technology have been installed on the New York subway. There are estimated to be thousands more around U.S. cities and in London at potential terrorist targets such as Downing Street. James will add in a probably even better take on this story from Russia Today. Strat4 emails reveal secret widespread TrapWire surveillance system. They include a ton of PDF links and other links to actually the accounts of some of the, you know, the spooks that work at Abraxas. And as long as we're mentioning, you know, they mentioned the Bourne films, we do want to tie in that essentially all the popular movies in America this summer are all about mind control, whether that's Bourne Legacy or Total Recall. To tie the WikiLeaks Assange angle, U.S. government threatens to storm Ecuador embassy to extradite Assange, James.
A lot of related things there, but let's cover the main one, TrapWire. This is a moving target right now, and it's developing by the minute. And I'd just like to remind people we're recording this Thursday morning here in Japan. That's Wednesday night in the U.S. So I'm sure by the time you're watching this, it's probably moved on from where we understand right now. But the latest that I have is that it turns out that the parent corporation that owns TrapWire, called Abraxas, their parent corporation, Cubic Corporation, is also owns an anonymizing email software that activists use to anonymize their emails. So there's some very interesting connections going on here, but there are still a lot of questions I have about this, how it functions, what it actually does, and there are some reports coming out from the respectable media like Slate, aka, you know, WaPo Lite, that are trying to poo-poo on the story and saying, oh, it's not this type of surveillance system that people are saying it is. It's actually just people writing reports about suspicious activity and filing them in this database with the video clips or whatever. So it's not that the scanning technology that people think it is, face scanning or whatever. I don't know the details of this, but by the time you watch this, I will have already interviewed the person who's covering this for RT, Andrew Blake. He's going to be on Corbett Report Radio tonight, which by the time you watch this will have been last night. So I hope you will go and download that interview from CorbettReport.com. It will be archived there by the time you're watching this. So we'll have a lot more answers on what this is and how it's developed.
Jameson, that's, I apologize for always the massive data dump of information, but I'll tie in one more bit. I find it really interesting that this story was essentially breaking on the, what was it, the 21st anniversary of the death of Danny Casolaro, the investigative reporter who was found dead in a Martinsburg, West Virginia hotel with all his notes gone, and he was tracking the octopus, and that would be the Promise software related to the Inslaw. So what's old is new again, James.
I'll accept that update, but only if we link to my two-part podcast series on the octopus.
Deal. Our third and final story this week comes from the CBC. Only 2% of Canadians deny climate change, suggests a poll. Only 2% of Canadians who responded to a new opinion poll believe climate change is not occurring. The findings are in a survey conducted by Incitrix Research Incorporated for the IPAC CO2 Research Inc., a Regina-based center that studies carbon capture and storage. The online poll of about 1,550 people was done between May 29th and June 11th of 2012. The results were to be released Wednesday, again, here in the States, Wednesday, August 15th, as I come to you. Our survey indicates that Canadians from coast to coast overwhelmingly believe climate change is real and is occurring, at least in part due to human activity, said Center CEO Carmen Dybwad. Respondents were asked where they stood on the issue of climate change. Almost one-third, 32%, said they believe climate change is happening because of human activity, while 54% said they believe it's because of human activity and partially due to natural climate variation. 9% believe climate change is occurring due to natural climate variation, and 2% said they don't believe climate change is occurring at all. The opinions about the cause of climate change and how to combat it are divided among the provinces and the region, and the rest of the article goes into all of those provinces and all of those regions and who responded in what way. James?
And for people who aren't up on their Canadian regions or whatever, it basically just devolves into, look at those Westerners, they're all so stupid, they don't believe in science, et cetera, et cetera. But this story is a perfect example of how the mainstream media treats people as stupid morons who can't think for themselves, because it frames the entire thing. The headline is that lowest common denominator sensationalism. Oh, only 2% of Canadians don't believe in climate change. Well, what does that mean? Who doesn't believe in climate change? Who doesn't believe that the climate is changing? Well, even the climate change, the man-made global warming skeptics believe in climate change. I mean, that's the underlying point of this. Everyone knows that the climate is constantly changing. The question is assigning what is the reason for that. And when you break that down, yes, most of the people believe that it's a combination of natural variation and man-made factors, because that even the skeptics believe that. I mean, the only people who don't believe that are the people who believe there is no such thing as a greenhouse effect, which is a very, 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 very small subsection of the skeptic community. The vast majority of people know that there is some relation between man-made factors and natural factors, and it's apportioning how much of each factor is working on each. But of course, you're never going to get that kind of detailed analysis in a story like this. It's just going to be 2% of Canadians don't believe in climate change, whatever that means. And it's a perfect example of so much of the coverage that's been coming out in spates recently. I think probably because of the drought and heat wave in the U.S., it's a prime time to start re-shoving the global warming propaganda down people's throats. So we have Richard Mueller, the supposed skeptic who is supposedly converted because of what he's found through his BEST team, the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Team, despite the fact that one of the scientists he was working with has basically accused him of completely skewing the data and has refused to work with him since. And the temperatures that they were basing it on, the surface stations, have now been called into question by a new paper, etc., etc. But none of that will be reported. It will only be skeptic is converted by the science. Or you have the James Hansen coming out with a new editorial in the New York Times and a position paper that is supposed to be some sort of scientific paper talking about how droughts and things now can be definitively tied to climate change. But if you look into that, he's wrong. We have too much to cover. I'll put it all in the related notes, but it's just time and time again, they treat you like you're stupid and you don't know what you're talking about.
This is New World Next Week, episode 124. James, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.